Adolf Hitler's personal library was one of the largest private collections in Nazi Germany, estimated at around 16,000 volumes by 1942, spanning topics like military history, architecture, philosophy, religion, and occultism. Much of it was destroyed or looted during the final weeks of World War II, burned, plundered by locals or Allied soldiers, or seized by Soviet trophy brigades, leaving only fragments intact. The primary discovery occurred in spring of 1945, shortly after the Allied victory in Europe, when U.S. soldiers uncovered approximately 3,000 volumes stashed haphazardly in wooden crates marked with the Reich Chancellery address inside of a salt mine near Hitler's Alpine retreat. Hastily evacuated from their Berghof and Munich apartment as Soviet forces advanced, the most heavily annotated book of Adolf Hitler and the surviving portion of his private library is a work of occult philosophy and mysticism titled Magic, History, Theory, and Practice by the German academic Ernst Schertl. This book, a copy of which is housed at the Library of Congress, contains extensive marks made in the margins, including numerous underlines, exclamation points, and question marks in Hitler's handwriting. The annotations reportedly reflect Hitler's interest in the occult and the role of divine providence in history, ideas which later became central to his own worldview and rhetoric. The line most notably and heavily annotated by Adolf Hitler in the book is, quote, "He who does not carry demonic seeds within him will never give birth to a new world." In this context, demonic seeds refers to an innate, primal, or internal force or potential that the author believed was necessary for an individual to engage effectively in magic or connect with paranormal realities in an effort to commune with a higher force or intelligences that he also called paracosmical, which were seen as the source of genius leading to profound consequence in history. The ancient Greek word daemon, for example, was often a benevolent term for spirit, divine power, or intermediary between gods and mortals. Another example is the concept of a muse, which the Greeks sought a possession, not as a literal takeover, but as a divine form of inspiration. It was believed that the muses, or goddesses of arts and sciences, could possess a person, making them a conduit for their creative genius. This inspiration was crucial for poets, musicians, and philosophers who would invoke the muses for guidance in their work. The poet Hesiod famously recounts how the muses breathed their divine voice into him, transforming him from a simple shepherd into a great poet. Greeks believed that true artistic creation came from external divine sources rather than individual human talent alone. This concept is mirrored by the inventor Nikola Tesla, who claimed that his ideas came from a core within the universe, which he described in a quote, "My brain is only a receiver. In the universe, there is a core from which we obtain knowledge, strength, and inspiration." Tesla believed this universal source of knowledge and energy was a fundamental principle of the cosmos, and he saw himself as a conduit for these ideas rather than their sole origin. It is in this context that modern occult magicians attempted to tap into a higher universal consciousness, and it is from the ancient Aryan Magi where these practices were diffused into the various subsequent mystery schools that followed. Considered the custodians of ancient antediluvian esoteric knowledge, the Aryan Magi, where we get the term magician from, influenced the Babylonians, Egyptians, Gnostics, Kabbalists, and alchemists. In the words of the founder of Theosophy, Helena Blavatsky, quote, "The mysteries of the Jews were identical with those of the pagan Greeks, who took them from the Egyptians, who borrowed them in their turn, from the Chaldeans, who got them from the Aryans, the Atlanteans, and so on, far beyond the days of that race. Blavatsky wrote that there was a common Aryan religion that predated the separation of the Aryan race, the core concept of the ancient mysteries, from Hermeticism and Gnosticism to the Kabbalah and alchemy, is the subjective connection between the individual and God, without the need for a religious hierarchy or middlemen, such as rabbis, imams, pastors, or popes. This is why ancient esoteric techniques, which facilitated a direct personal connection to the divine, was vilified and met with hostility by organized religions which sought to monopolize political power, facing a penalty of death for heresy. Guarded methods of spiritual alchemy were forced underground, veiled in symbolism, but still decipherable in all major religions to initiates who could understand their veiled meaning. Some of these symbols I've explained in several prior videos, such as those dealing with the Garden of Eden and the forbidden fruit, which enabled man and woman's spiritual eyes to be opened like the Elohim. The esoteric interpretations of the story of Adam and Eve suggest that gaining forbidden knowledge, while initially leading to a fall from innocence when misused, ultimately results in higher consciousness, divine inner wisdom or gnosis, and spiritual fortitude when applied correctly. While the esoteric secrets of mysticism, chi, and vril have been less guarded in the East, they've also been hidden behind a veneer of symbolism, which conceal their deeper esoteric meaning from the uninitiated, which is one of the findings of the German Annenerbe, or ancestral research organization, that sent expeditions in the 30s to Tibet in an effort to understand the ancient Aryan links between Asia and Europe. They believed that a single primeval esoteric wisdom was the Aryan source and mother of all world religions and was preserved in its purest form by initiates in places like Central Asia and India, stemming from the ancient Aryan Magi of Iran.
The supreme guiding narrative of the West comes out of those races, the indigenous white races of Europe, but also it goes back originally to Persia.
Mm.
The story goes back to Persia in a really interesting way. And I hope I can explain this in a user-friendly way, because this is what I'm going to try to tell you now is one of the most fascinating things about the Grail legend. You see, when you think of Persians in the pre-Christian era, you locate them in Iran, what is today Iran,
mm-hmm.
and it runs all the way up to the Caucasus Mountains, and that is the border that goes into the area of the Caucasus, which is, in my view, the homeland or geographic matrix of the rootstock of the white races. So the original Persians were Aryans. They were white.
Absolutely.
They're not Arabic. They're not Armenoid, see?
Such an important distinction that so few people get.
Oh, really? Really? So it was actually, as I explain in Not in His Image, it was a group or movement that came out of Persia called the Magian Order, mm-hmm. M-A-G-I-A-N. And it came out of Persia, as far as I can tell. I could identify the taproot as 6,000 BC. And this movement existed for a very long time and evolved. And it is from the Magian order that those whom we know to be the Gnostics eventually emerged. And it was the Gnostics who became the founders and teachers of the mystery schools.
What is the origin of the Gnostic thoughts? How ancient are we talking? How many thousands of years? what culture basically gave birth to this understanding?
Culture that gave birth to what we have inherited after many millennia, and we have inherited it in a very mangled and incomplete form because it is the intel that has been the most suppressed and attacked of everything that has been known to the human species. But if you want to go back to the taproot, it goes back to Aryan Caucasian peoples in the Caucasus Mountains and on the Urmian Plateau of northern Iran. And there was, as far as I can tell from my research, the home base of what I call the Magian Order. And the Magian Order probably took definition around 6,000 BC. So it's many millennia old. And what we call the Gnostics today, as I say in my book, they didn't call themselves Gnostics, but they called themselves Teleste, meaning those who are aimed, those who have an aim, a purpose, those who know where we're going, you see. And so the movement of the Telestai founded the mystery schools in different regions of the Middle East, in the Levant, in Syria, in Egypt. And then those mystery schools spread across all of Europe as a network of cells. And the taproot of that whole movement, that diverse movement, was the Magian Order, going back to ancient Persia.
Much of this esoteric history pertaining to ancient Aryans has been validated recently by Professor Anatoly Kliosov, a Russian scientist who specializes in DNA genealogy and has published peer-reviewed papers on the origins of the legendary Aryans. That said, Professor Kliosov was interviewed recently in a Russian video called Aryans and DNA Analysis, New Data, available on YouTube, dubbed in English. I'd like to now play a brief excerpt.
So, we've sorted out the Scythians and the self-designation of the Aryans, or at least their descendants. But we must say that among historians and archaeologists, there's still complete confusion about the Aryans, and this is despite the fact that the Aryans have been studied for, well, at least 150, maybe 200 years. And so, in DNA genealogy, and not only by analyzing data, not only mutations, but also historical data, we came to the conclusion that the era of the Aryans, as they were called, ended at least 2,500 years ago. This is ancient Persia, this is the Hemeneid dynasty, when Darius wrote on his stylus, wrote, that is, about himself, I am Darius, I am Arius, son of Arius. And so to speak, this was probably the last mention in such famous literature, when the word Aryan was written and officially accepted. So the Aryans aren't a thing of the past, or rather, the Aryans as a name are a thing of the past, but their descendants are alive today. They represent hundreds of millions of people.
This ancient Aryan history was well understood by the German Annenerbe, which expressed interest in the Behistun inscription located in Iran, created by the Persian king Darius, who declared his Aryan origin and ancestry in the inscription etched in stone 2,500 years ago. In 1936, Hitler's cabinet declared Iranians immune to the Nuremberg laws, proclaiming all Iranians as, quote, pure-blood Aryans, with Hitler himself declaring Iran to be an Aryan country. Of course, the genome was not sequenced yet at that time, so I found my own DNA results to be quite interesting, given that my ancestry is half German and half Iranian. So I thought I'd share a recent update from the site GenomeLink. Northern European, 32.9%. That's British, French, German, Irish, Scandinavian. Other European I have the most at 49.4%. East European at 9.7%. Asian at 2.2%. Native people of Americas, 0.2%. Zero for Oceanian, zero for African, and 5.6% for other. And I was asked what the category other means, and I wasn't sure. as it's blank on the map here. So I did a search and found out that it refers to DNA that's not clearly associated with a specific region in the company's database. So in other words, the DNA either did not fit neatly into one region, or there's some other overlap, or the database couldn't assign it to a location. What's interesting is that the total comes out to 92% European, even though I'm half German and half Persian. And that's because Iran and Germany share Aryan or Caucasian ancestry, so the overlap just comes out as European. Genetic studies have also shown that upper caste in India, the Brahmins, also have European or Eurasian DNA, tracing back to migrations originating in the Russian steppe from the Caucasus region south into India around 2000 BC. This ancestry is particularly pronounced in the paternal lines of many upper caste Brahmin groups and is linked to the spread of Indo-European languages and culture in the region. It was during this Aryan migration that written Sanskrit was introduced into India, as well as the horse and chariot. This Aryan ancestry is also attributed to the Shakya tribe, a clan in ancient India that ruled near the border with Nepal, which is linguistically similar to Saka, the designation of Iranic Scythian origins, an Aryan population that lived in the Eurasian steppe and Tarim Basin that migrated south. Siddhartha Gautama Buddha was born into the Shakya clan, and because of this, he is often called Sakyamuni, meaning sage of the Sakyas. His father was the chief of this Aryan tribe. This is why Buddha is always depicted with blue eyes, especially in places like Thailand, which has managed to avoid colonialism and communism, staying true to the ancient text, such as the Pali Canon, which lists blue eyes as one of the 32 major marks of a great man and attributed to Buddha. This characteristic is enumerated in texts such as the Lakhyana Sutta, which details the physical signs present at the Buddha's birth and throughout his life, including blue eyes that are deep blue and clear. The term nila specifically denotes a deep blue color and is repeated in the Lalitavistara Sutra, a Mahayana text compiling earlier traditions for the Buddha's eyes. Early Buddhist art from the Gandhara region from the 1st century in what is now Pakistan and Afghanistan portrays the Buddha with prominent blue eyes, as seen in the statues where the irises are carved or painted in lapis lazuli blue, emphasizing the sapphire-like quality from the textual descriptions. Tibetan Thangka paintings and Nepalese bronzes from the 10th to 14th centuries also depict the Buddha's eyes as vivid blue, often inlaid with turquoise or painted with ultramarine. The Buddha is identified as belonging to the Aryan lineage in the Pali Canon, born into the Shakya clan, where his noble birth ties him to the Aryan priestly and Superman class standing between humans and gods. The core of Buddha's doctrine is termed Aryan Dharma in the Pali Canon, where the four noble truths form the foundation of the Aryan path, and the Theravada Buddhism, the noble or Aryan Eightfold Path, is considered the path to liberation. Practicing this path leads to the gradual dismantling of defilements, culminating in full enlightenment, most likely after numerous lifetimes, depending on the individual's dedication. That said, there are esoteric branches of Buddhism that teach an accelerated path, where enlightenment is possible in the present life, even in as little as 7 years. A distinctive feature of these sacred teachings is its emphasis on esoteric transmission, where teachings are passed directly from teacher or guru to student through initiation ceremonies. The secrecy of teachings was often protected through the use of elusive, indirect, symbolic, and metaphorical language that required interpretation and guidance from a teacher. In other words, initiation. The teachings may also be considered self-secret, meaning that even if they were to be told directly to a person, that person would not necessarily understand the teachings without proper context. In this way, the teachings are secret to the minds of those who are not following the path with more than simple curiosity. Remember this when listening to the uninitiated try to debunk my interpretations and explanations regarding esoteric matters. That said, tradition asserts that these teachings have been passed down through an unbroken lineage going back to the historical Buddha in the 5th century BC. Since then, they have given rise to various sub-traditions across Asia. In Tibet, it evolved into Tibetan Buddhism, which became the dominant spiritual tradition, integrating local beliefs and practices. In Japan, it influenced Shingon Buddhism. Chinese esoteric Buddhism also emerged. Each of these traditions adapted ancient principles to its cultural context while maintaining core esoteric practices aimed at achieving enlightenment. While mainstream interpretations vary, initiates and adepts all regard qi, or life force energy, as vital and practice guarded techniques to amplify and harness one's sex energy, or vril, through intimacy without emitting their vital essence. This concept of inner alchemy is mirrored in esoteric Taoist practices. A great deal of Taoism is not just reading and following the philosophical tenets of the Tao Te Ching, but also how the body needs to be prepared and energized by the practice of what is called semen retention. The idea is that, along with deep meditation, one must not only retain their vital fluids, but also transmute their arousal energy to elevate their consciousness and spiritual fortitude. It is through an increase in one's personal magnetism that spiritual potential is enhanced, and by rechanneling the orgasm, becomes receptive to experiencing the higher realms. There's also an ancestral connection between esoteric Buddhism, particularly Tibetan tantric traditions, and esoteric societies that led to the formation of National Socialism in Germany, especially the Thule Society, founded in 1910, and the Vril Society in 1918. While Nazi ideology was predominantly rooted in Germanic paganism, Nordic mythology, and Volkish nationalism, there existed a connection to esoteric Buddhist and pre-Buddhist Aryan philosophy stemming from the Aryan Magi, symbolically expressed through the swastika and practically present in metaphysics and mysticism. The Ananarabe, founded in 1935, institutionalized this connection by funding expeditions not only to pursue Aryan artifacts in the East, but forgotten or forbidden occult knowledge, which was suppressed in Europe with the rise of totalitarian religious dogma after the fall of the Roman Empire. Helena Blavatsky's seminal works, such as The Secret Doctrine, published in 1888, described humanity's evolution through root races, with the fifth, or Aryan race, originating in Central Asia, including Tibet. These ideas blended tantric notions of kundalini energy, or vril-like life force, with Western esotericism, portraying the ancient Aryans as inheritors of subterranean or Himalayan wisdom traditions, which have been passed down from antediluvian times, from mythical origins in places like Atlantis and Hyperborea, or other legendary subterranean kingdoms like Shambhala, Agartha, or Asgard. The Thule Society, co-founded by Rudolf Hess and Dietrich Eckhart, who was Hitler's mentor, hosted lectures on Tibetan mysticism and Aryan migrations, viewing Tibet as a living archive of real energy, a psychokinetic life force akin to tantric prana for engineering supermen. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon and through all other major book outlets. If you'd like to support my work, you can do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description. Please subscribe for future updates. Leave your thoughts below. Have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.